Greetings, everyone. I'm excited to welcome Cole Gonzalez, CEO at Asa.ai. Cole, welcome.
What's going on, everybody? A pleasure to be here. Ben's been awesome. Really looking forward to this.
Yeah, great to have you here, Cole. So let's dive right in. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Cool. Yeah. So a little bit about me. I'm 22 years old. I'm from California. I grew up here, started off, you know, obviously whole backstory. I'll make it quick though. Went to high school, ended up going to college and obviously working really hard in school, played sports growing up. I've always been just very busy in general, and ended up going to college and going to Cal Poly Sloan. I ended up dropping out around 2 days into school, which was not a great idea, to be honest. There's no great story, to be quite frank. But during that time, started dabbling in social media. And in the beginning, it was kind of the thing where you start on social media and then everyone around you is kind of criticizing you. And it's, oh, this guy's doing social media. Because this was 5 years ago is when I started. And it wasn't super cool to be like on TikTok and those certain platforms, but ended up starting on social media and started on Instagram, just my personal account. Then started posting a lot of fitness content, moved over to TikTok because my buddy told me to start on there. And I was like, dude, I don't know. It's TikTok. Come on. But ended up moving there, started on TikTok, grew to around 100K within the first 6 months, and then got to 1 million followers in about a year, year and a half. And then from there, that was through fitness content and comedy content. So just really funny stuff and just talking about my fitness journey, and did some funny stuff as well. And then from there, I ended up meeting my long distance girlfriend. Her name is Sid. She's listening to this. What's up? And we ended up staying together. So we're still together after 3 years, which is kind of uncommon in social media space. There's not a lot of real relationships. So really grateful. She's amazing. She's been a huge part of this whole journey in the business side as well. I think having a great partner for me has been so beneficial. So yeah, ended up growing to almost 7 million followers in the past 5 years or so across all my platforms. And then, you know, diving into Asa.ai, all that knowledge essentially became accumulated and I deployed that into code. And just for a little more background, I'm a short form guy. And for anyone who doesn't know what that means, essentially everyone watches TikTok, Instagram, YouTube. So Asa.ai, simply put, allows you to take written text and turn it into engaging short form videos. And the best way I can explain it is that our goal is to make influence accessible to everyone and to allow everyone to tell their story. And we've lowered the barrier to entry to allow individuals to create short form content through the means of technology, but without leaning too far into the AI side and really diluting creativity, because we're pro creativity. So little background. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, no, appreciate the background. We'll definitely talk about Asa here in a second. So, you know, I like to talk about lessons learned, you know, in the process here. And you mentioned 2 days into school, dropped out. Anything you want to share? Because I interview founders, you know, say all ages. And for those listening who may be in, you know, early on thinking about founding a company, maybe in college or just past college, any lessons learned there on dropping out? Do you feel like, hey, not a great idea? Anything you want to share there?
Yeah, of course. And I'm definitely not against school. I think school can be great. And it's totally a case by case basis. I know I have friends that are doing incredibly well, much better than I am. And they went to school. So I think for my specific situation, for me, and the things I wanted to achieve within business and my technological understanding, and I didn't even really have social media that time, I kind of hit this area in school where objectively, what I was trying to accomplish in business, it felt counterproductive to be specifically for me in a classroom with multiple, you know, 30 other people, 40 other people in lecture halls, when obviously if it's one teacher and then it's 30 students, they can only give you so much attention and you can't really go without, or you can't really go outside of the scope of what's the curriculum when you're in school. So for me personally, something that's been important for me is I seek out information a lot and I would classify myself as very driven. So in my specific situation, it made sense for me because I knew if I left, I would continue to do even more, even though I'm not in school. So I think if anybody's in that position, it's hard for me to give advice because I don't have context. But for me personally, that was kind of my hypothesis of why I thought it was a good idea. But that might not be for everyone.
Right. Yeah. Depending on the situation. And yeah, I appreciate you sharing that perspective and insight. So yeah, let's talk about your current project, Asa.ai. So tell us, what products and our services does Asa offer?
Yeah, great. So we're currently B2C and it's self-serve. So you can go in there and buy a subscription. We're SaaS, obviously. And then in terms of the service that we provide, we allow, like I said, individuals to come in and type text and that text creates a short form video on social media. And if that sounds complicated, it's really that simple. You come to the platform, you purchase a subscription, every month you get credits. And I'm sure there's many people listening that are familiar with this model where you get credits, they don't roll over, they just restock every single month. And then those credits are associated with seconds in terms of how many seconds of content you can create. Like if you have a 60-second video, that's 1,000 credits. Let's say you buy a 20,000 credit subscription for $50 a month. That means you get 20 minutes of video. So, and then you type your words in, and then depending on how long your actual script is, which in social media, just like I'm talking right now, those are just words, right? So when you type in your script, that script gets turned into an entire short form video. And we do all the lifting on the development side, meaning you send it to our API and we just take your text and a few other inputs and we basically create images, voiceover, subtitles, transitions in an engaging way so you can post those videos to social media and tell your story.
Okay. And obviously you have a lot of experience with social media, tons of followers, millions of followers. So at what point in that journey did it come about just from your own pain point? Was this, you know, thinking about this for years or just recently where you said, hey, I need to solve this? So where in your journey did the idea come up?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Thanks for asking. I would say this was back. So just for context for anyone listening, we've been working on this for just about 2 years. And I think this speaks to a larger part of one of the biggest lessons I've learned in building a startup. And someone I really like listening to is Alex Ramosi. And he always talks about how much work it really takes to build something great. And I do believe what we're building is great. And I think any founder working on something should feel that way. But in terms of starting off, originally, what Asa was going to be was going to be a community through my social media platforms because I have a large following, get a lot of engagement. And I originally created this Discord, Ben. And this Discord it grew to 25,000 to 30,000 people. We'd have these calls, Discord calls. For anyone who doesn't know what Discord is, it's similar to Slack in terms of a community or maybe LinkedIn, Facebook groups. It's kind of the younger generation, I guess, type of Facebook group, Facebook pages type of thing. And I brought all these people in from my community. And my goal has always been to help as many people as possible create content on social media and really just tell their story. I get a lot of passion out of that. And that's why I love Asa, because it allows more people to use or to create content, short form content. But we grew this massive community, 25, 30,000 people, had these calls with 300, 400 people. Now it's going to make it a paid community. And what I realized through that process is that no matter how much information I give, at least in this aspect, because social media is so nuanced, there's so many pain points within creating content that information is not the only thing that's needed. And what I've noticed, this trend of where people are going, is that my belief is people are always going to find the easiest route, right? So I realized that even though I was helping so many people, the percentage success rate was so low. And I thought, how do I help not only help more people at scale? Because I know, just for context, we never even charged for the community. I just grew the community and I was doing these calls because I just really enjoyed helping people. And my partner and I, Brennan, he helped me with it, and he's still, we're co-founders on Asa AI. We looked at it and said, we don't think this is it. And we ended up canning that whole business. And we said, I think there's a better way to do this. So that's what started the idea of, you know, at that time, this was Q4 of 2022. I started seeing some videos, and I'm sure you've seen these, Ben, and people in the audience have seen these videos of the 11 Labs voiceover, and it's AI voiceover of a video. And I saw these videos doing 400,000, 500,000 likes, millions of views. And I'm like, that is AI and people are enjoying that. That's kind of interesting. So I caught this early on as I would go through TikTok. I was like, I look at the comments and, you know, it's this group of guys and it's about, you know, those motivational videos where the guy's doing pushups in the rain with the voiceover and people are emotionally attached to these videos that are AI. And I'm like, wait, there's something there. So that's what triggered the idea of, okay, what if there was some way to automate this process through AI and technology? And that started the rabbit hole Q1 of 2023 as we started building and we're like, I think there's something here. So anyways, long story short, we ended up building that Discord community. We canned it and said, this probably isn't it. How can I deploy my knowledge into a vehicle that has much more leverage and can reach millions of people? And that's when we started exploring this idea of there's got to be a way to objectively measure how to create a really good video. So we took that, we took my understanding, put it into code essentially, and out came AussAI, you know, 14 months later. So,
well, and so it sounded like, so you say officially founded the company, what, early 2023 then?
Correct.
Yeah.
Like we actually dissolved the original business because it was just associated with things that didn't work. I mean, AussAI, people might see AussAI, but my partner Brent and I, we tried building 2-3 businesses and they all failed along the way. And, you know, I'm here right now and I'm the one speaking on the podcast, but I'm really here because of the team, because I'm just one person and we're a small team. We're bootstrapped, as we're talking about, Ben. Mm-hmm. And we're a team of 3 founders, really 2 in the beginning. And my partner is incredible with the marketing side. And then we have a brilliant 20-year-old developer who's leading out most of the development. We just onboarded another independent contractor, one of my old friends. But the team, like, it's the team, you know? And I always like to say that because it really is about the team. It's not about me. So,
yeah. So appreciate that insight. Just kind of always that journey of where the idea came about and plus who you're around and those founders and people you know and having same ideas. So current team size. So you said you and 2 other founders, a developer, and then 1 more person, or?
Yeah. So okay. Brennan and I originally founded the company and then we dissolved it because it didn't work. And then we found it again. But then when we found it again, we had our lead developer. His name's Jaden. He's 20 years old. So us 3. And then I have a social media manager who helps me with my personals and then is helping with AussAI socials as well. And then we recently onboarded another engineer or developer part-time right now. That's an old friend that so happened to be a great culture fit and a very, very competent person. So that's been okay. Awesome.
So yeah, so you and the founder, then the young developer kind of now on the founding team. So an engineer plus now 1 part-time engineer adding on plus the social media manager.
Correct.
Yeah, perfect. So right, journey beginning a couple years ago, founded the company, say early 2023. So now tell us about 2023 and, you know, that build out. Was it heads down building the product? Were you building the community first, which maybe you had the community to sell into? So tell us the evolution of how now you came to market with AussA.
Yeah, great question. So in 2023, it was probably 6 to 8 months where it was simply just building out the product with really no validation that it was needed, which was, if I was to go back, I probably would have double checked that. But let's just say that's kind of what happened. And then during that time, it was just very iterative. It was this idea of creating a short form video with just text. It was kind of foreign, especially that early on. So we ended up building it. And, you know, you're probably wondering, how did you find this developer? I found him on LinkedIn. I ended up reaching out to 200-300 people. And it ended up that this individual was someone that was at my gym at the time. And we just so happened to cross paths. So that was by the grace of the Lord himself, by putting us together. So I ended up finding him. And we actually, just for context, Brent and I spent probably at least 4 to 6 months building out maybe half of the product, the first initial side. Like, we weren't developers, but we had to figure it out. During that time, for context, we wasted a lot of money on just making mistakes, which I think has to be done because you have to pay down your ignorance, is how I say it. So I had to pay down my ignorance and, you know, pay out a lot of developers that couldn't get the job done. But really, it was my fault because I didn't have proper context to these things. So anyways, we ended up finding Jaden, got on call with him, and we showed him what we were doing. And he thought he was crazy. We were crazy. But second of all, the one thing I'll always remember when we called him, Ben, was that he told us, essentially after we showed him everything and obviously got him an NDA, he was like, "You guys have actually done the hard part." And we're like, "Wait, what?" Because we thought the hard part was, but then again, that just speaks to us not understanding the engineering side, which now we have much more context. But brought him in. And in terms of how we actually started to approach, you know, going to market, we ran a beta for around 2 to 3 months, which was a really long beta. And what we did is we ended up once the product was there and we're like, okay, there's an MVP to some degree right here, we had to make a decision. Are we going to go and try and sell this, or do we need to go and prove that it works and refine it? And I think having a beta for us was the most valuable thing. And I thank each and every one of the beta testers, because yeah, it was free and yeah, they get to try a product. But at the end of the time, there's still a cost for free, which is their time. So super appreciative of everyone that was in the beta, worked really closely with them. Our beta testing group was originally 20 people, and there were random people that we just grabbed from my community through my socials. So for context, ended up growing, starting the Discord once we had the product there, very early stage MVP, started talking about it on my socials, getting people in, pulled 20 random people from my audience and said, let's just find people that we think might be able to use it. Most of them had no experience on social media, ended up achieving as a group over 1 million views in a month. And only around 8 of those people actually posted every single day. So that was posting once a day on 3 platforms, combined 1 million views through our technology, which was really cool. Like most of them brand new to social media. And through that process, we really refined the product and to somewhat what it is today. But the crazy thing, you know, looking back, is that we ended up going to market. And I know I'm trying to keep this short, but we ended up going to market after we ran this beta and we collected a wait list. And I think we got around 2,000 people on the wait list, which was really great. And we had 150 spots to start. So we actually did not open the floodgates. I remember talking to you about this, Ben. And we had this understanding that everything had to be perfect. But the thing is the more that we've learned, at least on the product side, at least for us, like nothing's ever perfect and you're always solving problems. And sometimes you just got to go and know that there's going to be problems. And I think that's been a really big thing for us, is you can only wait so long before you're like, we just need to let the ship sail and fix it as we go. And that was really hard for us to digest early on. But now our tolerance to handling these pain points, like last week, video generation was down for a full 24 hours and we have hundreds of paying customers. And if you would have told me that 2 months ago, I would have been like, we can't go to market if that's, but it just happens. So I think that was one of the biggest lessons that I've learned along the way, is that it's just a matter of dealing with problems. And as long as you never quit, people aren't just going to leave. If you quit, they'll leave, but if not, so that's been really cool for me too. But
yeah, appreciate it. There's a lot going on there. So one thing I want to focus. So you ran a beta for 2 to 3 months, about 20 beta users. What was your goal with that beta? What did you want to come out with on the other side of that beta?
Yeah, I would say a couple things. The first thing would be proving that the product works and there's people that want to use it. You can only prove that so much with so little people. But I think there's two things. One, are people actually able to use the product? Does it work? Can the videos get views? Can they perform? And we had videos doing 5,000, 10,000 views, sometimes 15,000 views on new accounts, which was great. So that was one thing. And one of the biggest things was just getting feedback and refining the product, because we could test it ourselves, but you learn a lot more by having people use it in a way that at least we thought that people were going to use it. And we found a ton of bugs and refined the product during that whole time. So it was a constant feedback process. We talked to them every single day. And we always had an open line of communication of, hey, that's wrong, let's fix it. Hey, that's wrong, let's fix it. Because obviously we wouldn't want to go to market. And our goal was to, at least before we went to market, solve the bugs we know that are there. Because unless they're unsolvable right now, it's kind of the mindset we had. So that was really the goal.
Okay. And then you mentioned your product went down for about a 24-hour period, which, you know, probably, you know, maybe months ago that would have been horrifying. But what was the feedback from those paying users? You know, because yeah, we don't want that. But was it everyone was okay, or a few irate customers? What was the outcome of that?
Yeah, it obviously is not ideal, and it's not a goal of ours whatsoever. So I just want to make that clear. But obviously, some people were really upset, and we took care of anyone that reached out. We gave them extra credits. You know, we talked to them. I think that's really important. And something we're continuously trying to improve on is setting up more systems to get more feedback and hop on more calls, because I love talking to our customers and learning. And that's, in my opinion, the best way. So, yeah, I mean, to answer your question, there's definitely some not so happy customers, which is totally expected, but we're very on top of customer support and very customer centric, because, you know, I really value people that are taking time to invest in us. So
yeah, no, appreciate that insight. I mean, happens to every app out there. And now, So beta users, free, and then now, right, revenue generating. I've been following your journey. So anything you want to share around your current MRR range or general revenue range, because you are revenue generating, I think.
Yeah. So we're sitting around 10K MRR right now.
Okay.
So oh, 10K.
All right. Yeah. Perfect. And so 10K MRR. And when did you flip that switch? Because you mentioned, you know, free beta, 20 users, wait list. So was it right after the beta that you flipped the switch and then started, say, maybe the trickle of filling up, you know, I don't know if it was the 150 spots that you were trying to then target next?
Yeah, exactly. And one big lesson that I learned, that it's constantly a lesson, is getting users. And I think at some points we're kind of focused on, are we focused on revenue or users? And the biggest lesson we've learned is that having some sort of discount, just lowering that barrier to entry to just get people using it, because if the product's good, they're going to pay full price probably at some point. So that was something that really helped us. Another thing that really helped us, Ben, just to kind of piggyback on that, we ended up talking to Ben, I think a month and a half ago, and a great piece of advice he gave us is, we were talking about, do we do one plan, two plan, three plans? And he told us, just do one plan, because you guys also don't even know what are people valuing the most. And in order for you to segment out those plans, you need to have a better understanding of that. So really great advice there. So we just tried to be very simple, have a discount, just get people through the door. We also have a free trial now, which a lot to learn there in a constant process. So it's just been a lot of testing for sure.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, a lot of learning in the early stages. So you mentioned, you know, bootstrap so far. And tell us about your thoughts around bootstrapping. Is that something you just bootstrap forever? Do you think you'll fundraise down the road, or give us some thoughts there?
Sure. So in our specific situation, I think it just so happened that we wanted to bootstrap. I have a belief that the longer we can bootstrap and we can afford to, as long as it's not detrimental to the business, when we go and make an ask, obviously the more data that we have, the more robust our systems are, and the more official we are as a business, with big quotations for anyone listening. Just the more developed the business is, the more likely that we could make a bigger ask and have that initial raise have a bigger impact. So I think it's balancing that with also saying, are we so limited in resource? Because obviously there's time too. And if money buys you some time, because, or it will speed up development really. So it's kind of that balance between, do we go and make the ask and speed it up, or do we wait a little bit longer and kind of build out systems? So I would say, in terms of bootstrapping for us, it's been beneficial. And I think potentially in the future we will raise, but we want to kind of delay that because we're pretty comfortable with how fast things are moving. And there's a lot of things that we know we can get done before we go and make that ask and have that real conversation. And to be honest, even if we had a bunch of money right now, I want to make sure I'm capable enough to delegate that in a place where it's going to be very beneficial for the company. So like, we've actually gotten people that have came up to me. I remember I was sitting down with a friend, an investor, about a month ago, and he wanted to put money in it. And I'm like, to be honest, if you gave me money right now, there wouldn't really be anywhere for me to put it. And I don't want to take your money.
Yeah, that's a great point, because if you had a pile of cash sitting in the bank, well, how are you going to use it? And that's why I've talked to founders who are like, hey, we want to raise or get some debt. Well, what's the plan with that capital, right? We need to know where to invest it in the business. So love that point. And so at this stage of your business, Cole, say 10K MRR and growing, and I know we've known each other for a bit, you went through my SaaS Metrics Foundation course. So let's talk a little metrics here. Sure. For an early stage SaaS founder, you know, what are you focused on and what have you learned in kind of the metrics process, and what should apply for a business at your stage?
Yeah. So I can just speak from my experience. Mm-hmm. And first of all, the course was incredible. That was absolutely brilliant. I recommend anyone listening to this, if you're starting a SaaS company, 1000% go through that, because the information's incredible. And granted, have we used everything? Absolutely not, because we're early stage, but I think it helped us cover the basics, which I think is really what I'd want to touch on, because I would be lying if I said we had all these amazing metrics, because we don't. We're just early stage and it's a process, in my opinion. But I would say the top thing is just chart of accounts and correctly setting those up. That's been incredibly beneficial for us to essentially just make sure we're mapping things in correctly. We're fully burdening expenses to certain departments. You know, we have certain revenue streams mapped to certain places, so we can see how much are people actually subscribing on our normal plans versus, you know, doing one-off credit subscriptions, things of that nature. Looking at, for us, being able to have a look at how much are we spending in R&D versus how much, you know, what really is the risk. And I think that's been the biggest thing for me, is being able to have some clarity into what might not be a problem right now, but may become a problem later. And I think that's been really beneficial for us. But in terms of metrics, it's very high level for us now. The honest truth is, right now, Ben knows this. We ran into a couple problems, some bigger problems, but solvable with QuickBooks Live, which I highly recommend anyone listening to this, maybe choose a different bookkeeper than QuickBooks Live if you're in SaaS, especially if you go through Ben's course. Just a tip of advice there for anyone who's considering that. But he gave us a very great recommendation, and we're kind of transferring over there and cleaning some things up in terms of our chart of accounts. But I would say the main thing right now is we're just focused on getting more users. One thing that that's really beneficial for us is that we are on a couple startup programs, which also, for anyone in SaaS, especially who is handling or working, their product involves really anything tech, but especially with GPUs. There's the Microsoft for Startups program. That's been incredible for us because we're paying $0 on GPU, which will not be the case forever. And then we're also part of the 11 Labs startup program. So our margins are incredibly high right now. It's inflated because we are able to be on these programs, which won't last forever. So like right now, the main goal is just getting more users, quite honestly, and really just making sure systems are in place to have clarity within the finances, I guess, would be the best way.
Yeah, and appreciate that insight. First getting product usage, get people in, get that feedback. Next, try to get some paying customers. And then, of course, now still continue to get users. How are you thinking about retention, right? Because in the course we talk about pillar one, where is our growth coming from? New users, existing users, then, okay, we're acquiring users. Are we keeping them? Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts right now on measuring retention? Is that important to you? Mm-hmm. Where are you in that journey from acquiring users now to thinking about their lifetime with you?
Yeah, no, great question. So I guess to start off, I would say one thing we realized early on is we're lacking a lot of data. And what I mean by that is we have a lot of people that are signing up. So right now, every day we have about 200 signups, which has really spiked since we started this free trial, and that's an iterative process. But it's hard to say this is our churn because we launched a month ago, and it's like people are going to try it and then they're going to forget they even used it and they're going to unsubscribe, right? So our churn for the first month was probably 20-25%, which is totally expected on people who are just in a wait list and they just want to try something because it's hype or whatever, right? But that, I guess that could go away. But I would say in terms of retention, the biggest thing we're focused on is having a better understanding of who's using the product right now. And one thing we're lacking, but that is coming up within the next week or two, is getting a post onboarding form. Because how I look at it is, in order for us to understand how to retain people, we need to understand who that person is and what groups of people are getting the most value. So obviously that requires multiple points of data. That requires who's using it, how old are they, why are they there, how'd they get there, which we have how they got there, which is all you're tracking on the front end. But you also need clarity into why did they purchase, why are they there, but then also what plan did they purchase. So I think, for, at least this is my opinion, for me, it's getting more robust data in place to make that conclusion, because it's like right now, I would be lying if I said it's these type of people, and that's the information we're working towards as we're getting more users. So that's an ongoing process. So in terms of retention, the main things that we could do now, in my opinion, is obviously having a strong communication line with our customers, because people are going to have problems if they don't get solved. I would unsubscribe myself. So there's going to be problems, solving them as fast as we can, having that a really iterative process. And then also getting more robust data on who's really using the software and what is their intended use case. Because for us, somebody creating a piece of short form content, there is such a wide variety of things you can do with that. And we've seen so many different use cases, but we're yet to really understand from our side who is getting there and what individuals are staying. And the thing is, we've been here for a month. So to measure retention, it would be like kind of just, you know what I mean? Not really a great, great number to work off of.
Yeah, it's hard. So it sounds like, okay, so getting users, you know, generally looking at churn retention, but now you're really focused on, well, what is my ideal customer profile? It sounds like who you're probably getting different backgrounds, people using this for different uses or different purposes. And now seeing, well, which one actually sticks, it sounds like, and maybe trying to understand your audience a little bit more in that ICP. Is that sound about right?
Yeah, it's absolutely accurate. For sure.
Yep. Yeah, that makes sense. Like, and right in your stage, still maybe iterating on the ICP, still iterating on product market fit. Absolutely. And have you found any surprising use cases so far with the use of your application?
Yeah, it's been awesome. It's really cool. To be honest with you guys, everybody's using it for different reasons. And it's kind of a hard thing because it's like, what is the most valuable? And that's what we're working on. But we've seen people use it for their B-roll behind their short form content. So they'll sit in front of their camera, they'll use it as B-roll in between scenes because you can turn off the subtitles and just have the images with transitions playing. So we have people doing that. We have this one individual, her name's Liza, and she is a mother. She's to be a mother, and she just got pregnant, and she's using it for her content because she has a personal brand around 80,000 followers on TikTok. And she had a video do, I think, 280,000 views on TikTok off the platform, which is awesome. She added music, and she talks about law, just to put it generally, for her personal business. She's using it to supplement her content and tell stories about and delivering value and entertainment to her community. And then that's increasing leads for her and her business, because she has a link in her bio and that's her business, and people are interested. And then they're like, oh, this is cool. And they go click on her link and they learn more about law. So really cool there. We have people that have replaced their normal content, because people do faceless content. And just to be clear for anyone listening, faceless content just means there's no one on the camera. So that just means it's images, it's words on the screen, and it's a voiceover. So that's the type of content we create, at least right now. And people have replaced their content with our tool. Some people have used it for sales outreach, which is really interesting, which is kind of interesting, right? So there's tons of ways people are using it. They use it for LinkedIn posts and just for personal content as well. So those are just like a few, but majority of them are just creating content, short form content, and then they're posting it to either a new account they created or an existing account they have.
Okay. Yeah, really interesting. I'm sure they'll continue to play out over time.
Yeah.
So Cole, really appreciate your sharing your experiences so far and your insight. As we wrap up, tell us what's coming up next for Asa.
Yeah. Awesome. No pun intended. Yeah. We have a couple really massive features we're working on in terms of giving more control to the users, because I think one thing that a lot of these companies are missing, and they've done a brilliant job, so this is not me talking badly about any of these companies, they've paved the way. You know, companies like NVIDIA AI, like that company has paved the way for how we can be here today. But I do disagree with some of the ways they're approaching content creation. Content creation is a very meticulous process, and it requires a lot of control and creativity. And there's two sides of AI. There's the AI's replacing humans, and there's AI's a tool to become more creative. And we're leaning towards the latter, which is AI's a tool to become more creative. So what we're really focused on, Ben, is adding features on the front end, because we're a video generator, we're not a video editor. And that really distinguishes us, because a lot of these people are trying to become the best video editor, and there's CapCut and there's Adobe Premiere, and they already do it really well, and we don't want to compete with them. Working on the video generation side, because most people don't want to edit their own videos. They just want to have a great video so they can post it. Most people don't want to edit. So we're focused on adding features on the front end, which I don't know if I want to talk too much about them, but one thing we're working on is allowing individuals to select transitions or also have AI apply different transitions that are more engaging, which is huge. I haven't seen any company do that. And a few more features that are really focused on giving more inputs on the front end. So when you hit the generate button, there's a predictable output on the back end, because that's a big thing for us, is we actually don't get any requests. I think we've had one to become a video editor or post-process a video. And to me, what that says is the video they're getting is in line with the expectations of what they put in. As long as you can match expectations of what they think they're going to get, nobody wants to go edit the video. And that's what I've found, is if you can create a predictable output, like you can give enough control to the user for them to be like, that's exactly what I was looking for, it doesn't cross their mind to edit the video. So we're continuing to add more control on the front end for the user in that video creation flow, which is very simple. So that when they hit that create button, over time, they're going to have so much control that it's essentially automating that entire process with ultimate control. And that's really where we're headed. So there's that. And then there's a few other things. I don't know if I don't want to speak too soon, but there's a couple other really, really big things we're working on, potentially a partnership with a pretty massive company in the future, but I'll let that one play out.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to give away your product roadmap right now. A lot to come, I'm sure. So yeah. So Cole, really appreciate your time today, sharing your journey so far. I look forward to following the continued journey. If listeners would like to learn more about Ossa, where should we send them online?
Just go to ossa.ai, OSSA.ai. Pretty simple there. And you can take a look there. And yeah, we got it all there.
Perfect. So if you'd like to learn more about Cole and Ossa, check out OSSA.ai to learn more. And again, Cole, really appreciate your time today and sharing your insights.
Thanks so much, guys. And thanks for everyone who took some time to listen.